Tell your mother. Welcome to the Cold Case Iceberg.
Icewood was, at the time of his murder, paralyzed and in a wheelchair. He became paralyzed after being shot the previous year in September of 2004.
I think she might have been staying with her sister, but she disappeared after her sister and her sister's boyfriend got into an argument, and then she was never seen again.
And he asked because he didn't know who her friend was. Also, he had never seen the vehicle before. Little did her brother know that was going to be the last time he saw LaQuanta.
I would rather wear Gucci slides out of the trash.
Gucci flip-flops.
I'd rather eat the trash. Call me Trash Man.
He says he went from being a vegan to eating meat now to just eating garbage. The progression of man.
And this is Bruhs of Murder, where we bring you true crime cases of color.
Isn't that called something? Isn't that being a vegan?
Yeah.
Like when you search and get refuse food because it's being thrown away?
That's called being a wook.
What's a wook?
A hippie. A hippie at a festival.
Did we have this conversation already?
Yeah.
I think we've done it a few times.
Yeah, a wook is a dirty hippie. So anyway, welcome to Bruhs of Murder, where we give you true crime cases of color. We teach you about wooks, and we play you music.
Learn something new every day.
Learn something. Hell yeah, brother.
Hell yeah, brother.
So now this episode, we're actually doing a two-parter on cold cases. Welcome to the Cold Case Iceberg. And if you're like Battle and over the age of 29, you might have to need a refresher on what an iceberg is, even though we did it before Battle.
Wow.
Those are his words. He's the one who's like, I don't know what that is. We've done it before. I really did not know.
I was confused. Talking about an iceberg. You know how many YouTube videos I watch that have iceberg? And when you said it, I was like, oh, I watch so many YouTube videos that are just iceberg this.
I know, because you sent me one before.
Yeah, we've done this before.
Yeah.
You were here. But yeah, so
are we really talking about ice? My case is all about ice.
No, they're all about the Titanic.
No, but much like an iceberg, the cases at the top are well known. And as you go deeper in the iceberg, it's less known.
Mm. Thank you for explaining that to us, Robert.
The more you know. Da-na-na-na.
Okay. So mine is another example of doesn't have to be a cold case, but is.
It's our favorite genre.
It's unfortunately actually something we've bumped into actually quite a few times.
Yes.
So Darnell Quincy Lindsay, also known as Blade Icewood, that was his rap name that he performed under, was an American rapper based out of Detroit who was murdered April 19th, 2005. As with many rappers, he did have gang affiliations, and it is believed that his murder is connected to gang violence. So Icewood was, at the time of his murder, paralyzed and in a wheelchair. He became paralyzed after being shot the previous year in September of 2004. That shooting was believed to be in retaliation to a shooting that was that killed another area rapper named Wipeout. So there was rap beef that was also connected to gang conflict within Detroit, and it seems to be an escalation of someone was shot based on that shooting, and then someone followed up and actually killed Icewood, or I guess I should say Lindsay.
Detroit beat Detroit in.
Yeah, and after Darnell Lindsay was originally shot, that put him in the wheelchair. He refused to cooperate with the police or any investigators on the case. And it was believed that he knew who did it. And, you know, because this was related to gang conflict, and he G-coded through it and refused to give up any names or help with the investigation.
Robert, for the layman, do you want to explain what G-coded through it means?
Oh, yeah, refusing to cooperate with the police because that would make you a snitch. And you should be handling things yourself or with your group rather than cooperate with the police So we see that occasionally where people refuse to work with the police in certain communities to protect their reputation or protect themselves from retaliation from gangs. We saw that previously where a child was shot and people knew who shot the child, but because that person was connected to a gang, they could not come forward without like fear of retaliation. Because even if you put that one person away, there is still a kind of a structure around them that will enact violence on their behalf.
There's no winning.
There's no winning. And so Icewind also has a song that he released called Ride on Me, which seems to point to knowing who was involved with the shooting of Wipeout. So this, you know, diss track that he put out also may have been related to his shooting on April 19th, 2005. And he was at a car wash. Someone pulled up to his car and fired into the vehicle, which killed him. And no one in his group has come forward with any knowledge of who conducted the murder. But it is believed that the assailant is known, or at least the group they're associated with is known. But again, people are refusing to come forward with that information. That is the case of late Icewind.
I mean, I'm glad you went first because Icewind, Iceberg, great connection there. Also, rap beef gets like so. Right now, there's a whole bunch of rappers getting like arrested for a bunch of shit, racketeering.
Great day. Who's calling you right now?
Well, I was saying, yeah, a lot of rappers right now are getting caught up with racketeering, all except for the Caucasian ones like Jack Harlow. He's under investigation, but not unlike in other ones, isn't getting arrested.
Interesting.
I mean,
why is Jack Harlow under investigation?
In connection with like racketeering and possible connections with like gangs.
Jack Harlow?
Yes. I said the same thing, but apparently.
Yeah, ever since the days of like Death Row Records, the amount of like even just financing for like certain musicians coming directly from gangs is not, I guess, unusual, but I think understood or underreported.
Yeah. Because, you know, no one wants to be a snitch.
Yeah. I mean, we also talked about that with DaBaby, you know, yes. When he didn't pay tribute to local gang when he went to perform in a city and had a violent interaction and killed someone over it.
Holy shit. DaBaby, I didn't know that, actually.
Yep. DaBaby killed a man in self-defense in a Walmart. Showed up asking for like tribute to be paid for him being in that city, which rappers have to do all the time. If they show up in a city, they have to pay the local gang for security, essentially.
Are you serious?
I did not know that. That's crazy.
Even big time people like Kendrick Lamar?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Cardi B had to do that, and there was like big debate over, you know, her gang affiliation and paying tribute and all that shit.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Dang, I'm so out of it.
Hold on one sec. Let me just pull out the thingy. Okay. Gross.
I don't want it pulled out. Leave it in.
Leave it. Yeah. Leave your. Treat me like a Mormon. Do it through the sheets.
through sheets.
All right. So I am covering the murder of Felicia Barnes. So she was 16 years old. She disappeared from, I think, her home in Baltimore. I think she might have been staying with her sister, but she disappeared after her sister and her sister's boyfriend got into an argument, and then like she was never seen again. Her body was officially found 45 miles away in the Conowingo Dam along the Susquehanna River, April 20th, 2011. They were only able to figure out who she was through a tattoo and dental records, which, to be honest, the fact that she had been in water that long, I'm surprised they could do some of that even.
What time of year was it again?
December. April. She went missing in December, and then she was found in April. Her death was determined a homicide, but they named the ex-boyfriend as a suspect because she and him had had a lot of interaction. There was like hundreds of texts between them, and he was the last person to see her alive. There's a lot of circumstantial evidence pointing towards him, but there's nothing concrete. So he had been charged, went to trial. I don't think he was ever charged. And then eventually all of the counts against him were completely dismissed because there wasn't any concrete evidence. So at this point, there aren't any leads to what happened to her. And she was buried in Georgia on May 7th, 2011.
It's always unfortunate when like all of the clues are pointing directly to one person, but there's just simply not enough evidence to convict.
Yeah.
It's like, it's very unsatisfying. And there's always that part of me that wants to say, it's like, well, we know it was them, but yeah. I would never actually want that in our justice system.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it sets a bad precedent.
To blur the lines of probably to reasonable doubt. You
know? Well, and I do think that even though there is a lot of circumstantial evidence pointing to her sister's ex-boyfriend, there's really nothing that is like concrete. They say here that the defense argued that there was no physical evidence that proved that the ex-boyfriend was the killer and that he wouldn't have had enough time to kill her, clean up the evidence and all the things within the time frame that he had. So it's like, things point towards him, but it's not one of those things where it's like with Casey Anthony, concrete. Where it's like, we kind of know that there's no other alternative.
I still don't know. Casey Anthony case is wild.
That's crazy. Still don't know how she got off with that.
Yeah. So I think they're still hoping to like find something, but in the years since then, there hasn't been any new evidence or anything like that. There was a law passed in her honor, like in her name, and there are lots of different laws in different states that are similar to her bill, but she's the only one where the law is named after a person of color.
What's the law?
It's a bill known as Felicia's Law. The bill, sponsored by the Maryland State Delegate Jill P. Carter, requires us to publish a list of missing children along with statistics and a list of volunteers who can aid law enforcement in search for missing children.
Okay,
cool.
Yeah.
I mean, something good came out of it, at least.
Yeah, it's just, I think the thing, too, that doesn't help is that, like, when people just go missing, there's not that same level of, I don't know, like, there's not as much behind finding them as there would be to figuring out what happened immediately if it's, like, a known homicide. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The urgency is different.
Right. Exactly.
Weirdly enough.
Yeah, the community, like, feels there's a personal stake of, oh, there's a murderer who could murder me or my family out still, and I need to find that person, versus maybe they ran away.
Yeah,
and
which...
Especially when it comes to, like, children of color, especially like little girls, mm-hmm. like, oh, she must have been a runaway, or she had a boyfriend. Yep.
She wasn't trafficked, she ran away.
Well, yeah. And the thing too is like when they're at that age of 16, I feel like there's also less of an urgency on it because of the way that we treat not only teenage girls, but Black teenage girls and the way that we adultify them.
Yeah, they treat them like they're in their 30s and it's like, sorry, she's 14.
Yeah. So...
So I think I'll go on to my case.
And now, a message from our sponsors.
So now, my case is about Amos Smith. It's similar to like a lot of things we covered before when it comes to like people and just gun violence too. So now, it starts on the morning of March 11, 2008. Amos Smith was dropped off at his mother's residence in Chester, Pennsylvania. He asked his mom, Valerie, if he could pick up his twin brothers from their preschool that day to like spend some time with them and hang out, which he's done before. He spends a lot of time with his little brothers. He's known as a very like caring and family oriented person. That day he spent time with them by picking them up and was going to drop them off later that same day. So now his mom agreed and, you know, Smith prompts and returned them back to their home that evening after spending some time with them. Now this is when things kind of take a twist, and his mom actually said in like news reports that she had a premonition about what was going to happen. After being unable to reach him that whole entire night after the drop-off, she felt like she had a premonition in a dream that something went horribly wrong. And that same evening, well, later in the evening, one of his friends came rushing through their door and collapsed, saying that Amal Smith had just been shot and killed. Now, a question that she had, and a lot of other people in the community had too, is like, who would kill such a kind-hearted and caring person? But on that night, he had made his way, after dropping his twin brothers off, he made his way to a local club just to hang out with friends and grab some drinks. You know, he's there partying with his friends. He had about, people said, 2 to 3 drinks. Before he left, he had kissed one of his old friends on the forehead, you know, wished him a good night, saying he's going to see him later, and then headed out. Right as he was making his way to his car, someone, you know, decked out all black mask, approached him and shot him several times, then ran off. And that was it. No one has ever been charged with this murder. No one, just has been no progress. No one has spoken up or said a thing. Valerie said that she actually calls the police twice a year about the case, once on her son's birthday and then once on the day he died. She said that when she called on his 29th birthday, which was a couple years ago, she found out that the person who was working his case had retired and didn't pass the case along to anybody else. So they just shelved it after no one wanted to continue to work on it. So it's just still up in the air.
So do we know if it was like a robbery gone wrong? Did he have belongings missing? Or
Nothing was missing. It, from all the reports, everything that said that someone ran up on him, just shot him and ran away. People don't know. No one has come forward with like a motive, if he had beef with anybody. From all accounts, he didn't have beef with anybody.
It literally could have just been a random killing. Like, those do happen.
Yeah.
It could be that, or it could also be like, if there's something else going on in the area and that was meant for someone else. You know what I mean?
Yeah, mistaken identity.
Especially late at night, too. Yeah, it could have been easy as that. But yeah, just no information. And I wonder how many cold cases or murder cases do just get shelved when people just don't feel like trying to figure it out anymore.
I would imagine a shitload.
which is sad.
Yeah. It's so interesting to me because it's one of those things too that you hear sometimes where it's like these police departments, sheriff's offices don't have the resources to follow up in all of them, but yet they have like $1 billion budgets. It's weird how that works, huh?
Yeah, I can buy a new tank that I'm never going to use.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can't work this case.
Oh, but there's all these, like, unsolved cases. Fuck them.
The police budgets are so stupid. Like, I remember when I was working at Fort Dix, I was doing a class for a bunch of cops and, like, rollover training. So we had this big machine, it's like a giant Humvee, on, like, these two little spokes that, like, turn. And it's supposed to simulate, like, if you're in a vehicle, you get hit with, like, a grenade or you hit an IUD, you flip over. How it feels to like roll over and what you're supposed to do. But I'm sitting there training all these cops. I'm like, y'all never are going to be in a situation where you're in a vehicle that's hit by an RPG or you run over a line. Like, you are South Jersey police.
Yeah. Well, so like during, like when I first moved to St. Louis, it was right around like Ferguson popping off, and they deployed like tanks, not like, I'm not military. I don't know any of this terminology, but like heavy, heavy Humvees that are like armored.
No, they bought us from the army.
Yeah.
They bought us from the army.
Maybe. I don't know shit about military stuff, but they were so heavy, the infrastructure could not support them. And they were like destroying the streets that they were being deployed onto. So like, not only are you not listening to these people who are asking for justice, you are also destroying the infrastructure in that community. And it was just like, it was such a small thing that was just adding on top of it. Because obviously there was so much violence enacted by the police that people were focused on all of that, that those little things kind of just got swept away under the rug that like, yeah, we also have to repair the broken ass streets now because you're driving tanks down it.
Hate it here.
Man.
All right. And let's slide all the way to the, I guess, the middle part of this iceberg. Lavender Yum Yum, take it away.
Yes. Hello, everyone. I'm Lavender Yum Yum. Thank you for being here.
Sorry.
Yes, hello.
So, LaQuanta Riley was a 19-year-old that was living with a roommate in Eufaula, Alabama, until December of 2003, when she went missing. Born February 26, 1984, LaQuanta was raised by her aunt. This was due to how young her mother had her, which was 16. Although her mother was young, they still made efforts to remain close during her childhood. Despite being raised by a family member other than her mother, LaQuanta was an outstanding student. So outstanding that she was planning on attending a college with a full ride scholarship to pursue a degree in forensic science. During this time, eventually she wanted to relocate with her mother, and on December 5th, she returned to the apartment to retrieve some of her belongings. After getting her belongings, she reaches out to her mother for a ride, and unfortunately, she was not able to pick her up. So instead, she gets a ride and moves in with her aunt. She spent the next two nights at her aunt's residence. On December 7th, LaQuanta was seen getting into a dark green vehicle that could either be a Ford Taurus or Chevy Caprice. While in this vehicle, she made a quick stop to her mother's residence to get a jacket, and she left. Her brother was inquisitive, though. When LaQuanta arrived, he asked her who was driving the car, and LaQuanta simply responded that it was a friend. And he asked because he didn't know who her friend was. Also, he had never seen the vehicle before. And just a side note, everyone that's listening, and all of you too, I'm a very nosy person, so if I'm with you or if you come to wherever I live and I don't know who you're with, I'm going to want to know who you're with and just make sure. I'm very, very nosy when it comes to that, because I'd rather you get mad at me versus something happen to you and I feel guilt later down the line over hypotheticals that probably couldn't be. So sorry.
Y'all want to know how nosy Battle is? The other day, I was on the phone with Battle, and I told him I just woke up from a nap, and he asked me why I took a nap.
I'm nosy, yeah, okay? Like, why are you sleeping? What are you doing?
That was exactly like Battle.
Well, no, he's like, well, are you sick? Like, what's going on? I'm like, I just took a nap.
Very inquisitive. Yes. Battle's that guy you'll invite to a party. He'll be like, who's all there?
No.
But who did you invite?
Who are all the people in this picture on your mantle?
Need to know. Okay, so little did her brother know that was going to be the last time he saw LaQuanta. Upon her leaving, they noticed that she left behind money and her purse, which wasn't like her. After 3 days of not hearing anything from LaQuanta, Pam Riley, her mother, reported her daughter as missing because she got a very weird message on the answering machine. So, some time goes by, and Pam received information from local police that LaQuanta's name was being used to rent an apartment. And this apartment was around the area that she graduated high school. So, like any mother would do, she drove to the apartment. Once there, she was able to speak to some people, including a neighbor, where they stated that she was over at their house using her phone after an altercation with another person. Pam was informed that soon after the incident, LaQuanta moved out of the apartment complex completely. The only evidence in this case of LaQuanta Riley is a telephone message left on Pam's phone, where a man could be heard saying her daughter's name while LaQuanta can be heard saying, "Please let me go home," in the background. However, the phone call was not fully verified because the message was difficult to understand. It was either, "Please let me go home," or, "I want to go home." Until this day, LaQuanta is still missing and her case remains unsolved. LaQuanta went missing December of 2007. When she went missing, she was 5'8 and weighed about 200 pounds. She had dark hair and brown eyes. Some other markings that she had was a scar on her nose, two tattoos, one on each arm, and one that read RIP Misha, and the other arm had her name. If you have any information about this case, reach out to the Montgomery Police Department.
Yes, do not message us with information. I've had someone do that before in the DMs, and that was really weird. I was like, you need to call the police.
We can think of Brandon Lawson's case. Slightly different, but also like the whole phone call thing.
Brandon Lawson?
Yeah.
What case was that?
I don't remember where it was, but I think he was like in Texas or something, and he was like driving to his like brother's house in the middle of the night. They find his pickup truck like on the side of the road, but like in the road. And he had called 911 in the middle of the night, and like we have it recorded, and like people have listened to it a bunch of times trying to figure out what he's saying, but you can't.
9/2/13, 0:50 and 38 seconds. 911 emergency.
Yes, I'm in the middle of the field. It's like we're just pushing guys over. Right here going towards Javelin on both sides. My truck ran out of gas. There's one car here. Got to take to the woods. Please hurry.
Okay, now run that by me.
We're not talking to him. I actually ran into him.
Ah, you ran into him. Okay.
That's the first guy.
Do you need an ambulance?
Yeah. No, I need the cops.
Okay. Is anybody hurt? Hello?
And no one ever saw him again. His truck was there. No one ever saw him again. I think he might have been found recently, but he went missing like over 10 years ago. And like, there was not a trace of what happened to him except for that phone call.
Oh,
damn.
If you get an update on that, let us know, especially what happened with him. If you could look it up.
He's definitely dead. I think they found his body, but we still don't know. I say that because they found
I assume
recently.
That they found him alive. No. I was going to say, whoa, that's crazy. I just am so hopeful for these cases. I don't like cold cases.
Not only is he very inquisitive, he's very hopeful.
Yeah. he's alive.
Honestly, he's like a Disney character.
I'm the oblivious nut that like would probably get murdered if I went somewhere.
I don't think so. As nosy as you are,
all the time. Don't say that.
Hey, you're too adorable to murder.
Until I start talking or have a resting bitch face like I do.
Oh yeah, like, he'll shut the fuck up. Snap him first. He asks too many fucking questions.
I really do.
So where are we going?
Can we listen to music, please?
Can I have a snack?
Yeah, your truck smells weird. The cigarette? These cigarettes not good for you. You know that, right?
You shouldn't smoke in your vehicle. The resale value is going to be terrible. I get so mad when I see people smoke in their cars. Sorry. I'm just like, why would you smoke in your vehicle? That's disgusting. You probably stink. I'm sorry, smokers, but...
Nah, I'll be smoking blunts in my car, man. Anyway. Yeah. Am I getting my Kia Soul?
You have one of those box cars?
Yeah, hamster.
Does it have little dancing hamsters in it?
I wish. That's the only reason why I got it.
Was that commercial?
Yeah, when I was a teenager, I saw that. I was like, I want that car. All right. That was the episode. That was the iceberg. Next episode, we're going to be joined by a friend of the show, another true crime podcast, to help us dig up some more shit. Also, in August, we'll be at the True Crime Festival in Texas, Dallas, Texas. We're going to be there. Come hang out with us. We're still planning out.
Come see how cute I am.
Yeah, come see how cute Swanee is. How kawaii Battle is.
My shoulder slope. I fit into small places.
I keep forgetting that it's in Dallas, and I keep thinking it's in Austin, and I feel like I'm going to end up buying tickets to Austin.
Kelly's going to have a future. Like,
you're going to have to come pick me up.
That's like a 4-hour drive.
Yeah, I was going to say, those are not close.
He's like, where's everybody at? I can't find the hotel. So we're locked that in.
I've concerned.
See us there. We're still gonna figure out exactly what we're gonna do, but it's gonna be a blast. We're gonna have fun. Actually, we're gonna make Kelly do a skit actually by herself. No one's gonna be
on. Bring out the Kia Soul, the cardboard.
Oh, bring out the cardboard
somewhere. No, I'm kidding. I don't.
Yeah, so enjoy the music, and we'll catch you hoes later. Kiss it from the homie.
I gave you a raspberry.
We now have breaking news.
Everything else but you.